Have you ever played the game, what if? Have you ever thought to yourself about what if it had turned out differently? And there are a lot of books that have been written about the what if concept. What if Napoleon had won the Battle of Waterloo? What if Robert E. Lee had defeated the Union armies in Washington, D.C. and Richmond? And what if Hitler had won World War II? Have you ever thought about how different the world would probably be? There may have never been a Hitler if Napoleon had won, because he would have dominated Europe. If Lee had won, we might look like South America today. Not with a single country, excluding Canada to the north of us and Mexico to the south of us, but I can almost envision the nation of Texas, the nation of California, some Midwestern group coming together, the 11 Confederate states being the Confederacy of the South, a divided country. Aren't we glad those what-ifs never happened? Well, I want to tell you a story about two men who bonded together even under circumstances where one might have expected that they would have drifted apart. And after we talk about this story of friendship and companionship and love, a deep and abounding friendship that could have easily fallen apart, I'm going to ask you two questions. We're going to talk about this friendship, how it developed, how it endured, and then I'm going to ask you those two questions. And if you would, turn to the books of Samuel. Most of our readings will be from 1 Samuel, with a little bit coming in 2 Samuel. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, 1 Samuel chapter 18, beginning with verse 1, we read, "Now it came about, when he had finished speaking to Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him himself. Saul took him that day," that is, he took Jonathan, "and did not let him return to his father's house." And then we read that Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan took his robe off and gave it to David, along with his armor, his sword, his bow, and his belt. Can you see this devotion that's beginning to be developing between these two young men? Their friendship was deep and abounding. That friendship continued to grow in spite of circumstances that at least would lead me to think that there were reasons for it to easily have fallen apart. And the first of those reasons was Jonathan's dad, King Saul. Because it didn't take long for Saul to become very jealous of young David. We read in 1 Samuel chapter 18, 1 Samuel 18, verses 6 through 9. And this kind of fits in with some of the things that we talked about this morning in Proverbs. That jealousy and that covetousness, and the fact that I don't want to be one-upped by somebody. And it happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistines, that the women came out of all of the cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul. And they had tremolines, and they were singing with joy and with other musical instruments. And as the women sang and played, they said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And this upset Saul. Because we read, then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him, and he said, They have ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. And that's saying, I think, that David is a greater and a better warrior than King Saul. And from that time forth, there was a rift between David and King Saul. And yet during all of this, Jonathan remained his true and abiding friend. Saul goes on to say, Now what more can he, David, have but this kingdom? Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. And then in verse 11 we find that here's the first time that Saul tries to kill David, because he hurls his spear at him, trying to pin David to the wall. And he didn't do this once, but he did it twice. And in both cases, David was able to evade the spear that was thrown at him. Well, why was Saul afraid of David? Well, certainly he was jealous because of this concept of David being a greater warrior. But I think it was because Saul at this time knew that God had departed from him and was now with David. And because all of Israel and Judah loved David. Well, let's take a minute and look at our two friends, Jonathan and David. And their backgrounds are totally different. Jonathan is a prince of Israel, the son of the king Saul. And he was, by all right, as the eldest son, the heir to the throne. He was destined to rule after the death of his father based on tradition. And Jonathan knew about this, but he also knew about the promise God had made to Saul had he been faithful. In 1 Samuel chapter 13, 1 Samuel 13 and 13, Samuel says to Saul, You have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, for now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. Had Saul been faithful, his kingdom would have ruled over Israel forever, and Jonathan would have inherited the throne upon the death of his father. Jonathan was a young man, a man of great courage, a man of great character and strength and determination, one who looked to and relied on God. He was a mighty soldier. Remember when he and his bow carrier went out by themselves and killed 20 Philistines in that half plot of land or half acre of land? Not only was he a mighty soldier, but he was respected and trusted by his men. You remember the time when, and in 1 Saul, Samuel 14, verses 24 and 26, that Jonathan did something contrary to a commandment of his father. Saul had made this rash oath, and he had said in 1 Samuel 14, beginning in verse 24, And then the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had placed the people under oath, saying, Cursed is the man who eats any food until evening, before I have taken vengeance on my enemies. So none of the people tasted food. Now they came into the land where there was a forest and there was honey on the ground. And we know that Jonathan partook of that honey because he didn't know about the oath that his father had placed on his people. And yet his men protected him. And here's this mighty warrior, this prince of Israel, the apparent heir to the throne of Israel, Jonathan. And on the other hand, there's the young brother, David, the shepherd, the keeper of sheep, the youngest son of Jesse. And we read that he was a ruddy, bright-eyed shepherd boy. And over in 1 Samuel 17, 34 through 36, we read that, like Jonathan, David was also very brave. But David said, beginning in verse 34 of chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, "But David said to Saul, 'Your servant used to keep his father's sheep.'" He was a shepherd. "And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear." And then he goes on to say, as he's preparing for battle with this giant, that this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing how he's defiled the armies of the living God. So David, too, even though he was a shepherd boy, was a mighty warrior, one who relied upon God for his strength. 1 Samuel 16 in verse 18 says the following about David. 1 Samuel 16 and verse 18 says, "Then one of the young men said, 'Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, who is a skillful musician.'" And David used this talent to soothe King Saul when he would get upset and angry. A mighty man of valor, a warrior. He killed the Philistine giant, the bear and the lion, and led the army many times against the Philistines. He was one prudent in speech, and we know many of the things that he has written. And Matthew read one of those lamentations that he wrote after the death of his friend Jonathan. And he was a handsome man. But most importantly, the Lord is with him. Here's this shepherd boy, this warrior. But you know, he also becomes a prince of Israel. In an attempt to distract and discourage David, Saul said, "I'm going to marry him off to one of my daughters." First time around, David said, "I'm just not worthy. I don't have any money. I can't do it." So Saul, after he finds out that his younger daughter, Michal, loved David, he said, "This will be good. I'll get him distracted. He can marry my younger daughter." And David says, "Well, I don't have any money. I'm just a poor shepherd boy." And so Saul says, "Well, I don't need a dowry. All I want you to do is bring me back the foreskins of 100 Philistines that you killed." And so David did that, and we find in 1 Samuel 18, 20 through 27, that he does indeed marry this daughter and become one of the princes of Israel. all through this, we can see how any love that King Saul might have had for David and any favor turned to bitterness and resentment and hate. Saul was determined to murder David because he knew that David would replace him. And yet throughout all of this, that friendship grew. The bond between Jonathan and David grew and grew and grew. This lasting friendship began, I think, when David defeated the giant Goliath. And as we look through 1 Samuel, we find that time after time after time, Jonathan put his own life in stake in support of David. Turn with me, if you would, to 1 Samuel chapter 19. And begin reading in verse 1. Now Saul spoke to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. So Jonathan said, I told David, saying, my father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide, and I will go out and stand before my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. Then what I observe, I will tell you. Even under those circumstances where David was being conspired in the heart of Saul to be murdered, Jonathan stood up for him and warned him. And then over in verse 6, so Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan, and Saul swore, as the Lord lives, he shall not be killed. Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things. So Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. And then over in chapter 20 of 1 Samuel, we read, beginning in verse 1, then David fled from Nakum in Ramath and went and said to Jonathan, what I have done, what is my iniquity, and what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life? And so Jonathan said to him, by no means, you shall not die. Indeed, my father will do nothing either great or small without first telling me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. And then in verse 4, so Jonathan said to David, whatever yourself desire, I will do it for you. That friendship, that bond, continued to grow between these two men. Jonathan says to his father in 1 Samuel 19, verses 4 and 5, do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you, for he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistines, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it, father, and rejoice. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause? There was this easy reason for Jonathan just to have walked away. And yet we just read in 19 and 20 how he remained loyal and told David those issues and times when his father sought to kill him. And he did this even though he knew by now that Saul had broken the commandment and was not going to have his kingdom survive, and Jonathan would not be the king, but David would be the king. And yet, Jonathan didn't say, "It's just not fair, God. Why are you doing this to me?" He accepted it and remained a true and loyal friend to David. And likewise, David was loyal to Saul and to Jonathan. There were a number of times that David could have killed Saul, but each time he spared Saul's life because David remembered the covenant that he and Jonathan had made, recalling the words that Jonathan spoke in 1 Samuel 20, 14 and 15. 1 Samuel 20, 14 and 15. "If I'm still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, nor even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." Well, we know that Jonathan died in battle along with his two brothers on Mount Gilboa. And later on in that same 31st chapter of 1 Samuel, we find that Saul commits suicide by falling on his sword. And when David finds out about this, that's when he writes this Song of the Bow that Matthew read to us. Now, keep that in mind of this great friendship that these two had. And I want to jump ahead now to 2 Samuel chapter 11 and remind you all of a story that you know about David and Bathsheba. It was springtime, and it was time, we're told in 2 Samuel 11, for kings to go out to war. And so Israel is at war, but David stays back. And one evening, it's a warm evening, and David goes out onto his roof, and he sees this beautiful lady bathing. And you know the rest of the story, but briefly we'll go into it. David says, "Bring that woman to me." And he lies with her, and she conceives and tells him that she's pregnant. And so what does David do? He says, "Well, who is she?" "Well, she's the wife of Uriah the Hittite." And so David brings him in and from battle, because he's out there. Remember, there's a battle going on. And he brings him in and he says, you look tired. You need to take a little rest, go on home, clean up, get a bath, be with your wife. The next morning he finds out that he slept at the foot of his house, not going home. And he brings him in and he says, "Well, why didn't you go home and be with your wife?" And you can guess why David's doing this. And he says, "But we're at war. And men are dying. And it's just not right for me to have the luxury of being at home and being with my wife." So David says, "Okay, I'll try another strategy. I'll bring him in and we'll wine and dine," and he gets him drunk, but he still doesn't go home. So David says, "What am I going to do? I know. I will set it up. I will send Uriah back to the front line, put him in the most dangerous position possible. We'll charge the enemy, and when we're in the heat of combat, the signal for all of the other men to withdraw will be given, and he'll be killed." And that happens. And so then David takes Bathsheba for his wife, and we read at the very end of that 11th chapter, "And David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife. Then she bore him a son. But the thing that David had done was evil in the sight of the Lord." I've said all of that now to begin to propose a what if. What if Jonathan hadn't been killed? What if that true friend that David had in Jonathan had not been killed? And he was with David that evening And David goes out and he says, "Hey, Jonathan, look at this. I'm bringing that lady to my house." And Jonathan says, "No, David, no, that's wrong. Don't do that. Come on in. Let's think about what the Lord has said. You're married to my sister. You can't do these kind of things. God does not want you to do this." Wouldn't it have been wonderful if something like that could have happened? Now, I've said all of this to ask you two questions. Do you have a Jonathan? Do you have someone in your life that'll pull you back when you have one of those Bathsheba moments to say, "Don't do that. It's wrong. Here's why it's wrong." And that they're willing to do it even if it means your friendship will be broken. Do you have a Jonathan? And the second question is, are you a Jonathan to somebody? If you're not a Jonathan to somebody, look around this audience. All of us need a Jonathan. We need someone to pull us back when we have that Bathsheba moment. When we have that moment when we're about to cross the line and do something that we may know is wrong. But if we have a Jonathan, it just says, "Whoa, stop. It's wrong. You ought not to be doing that." So think about those two questions in light of this wonderful friendship that Jonathan and David had, and that David lost when Jonathan was killed in battle. If he'd been there on the night that he looked on Bathsheba, maybe the story would have been different. But the most important thing is, are you a Jonathan to somebody? And do you have a Jonathan? Think about those two questions. And I hope that the answer for each of us is yes, I have a Jonathan. And I am a Jonathan. It's kind of easy for those that are married. I've got the best Jonathan around. I mean, will she tell me when I do something wrong? You're absolutely wrong. I'm not sure I'm as good a Jonathan to her as she is to me. Think about it. Do you have a Jonathan? And are you a Jonathan? We've come to the point in our lesson where we always want to offer the Lord's invitation. And if you think about it, who's the best Jonathan that we all have? And that's Jesus Christ. Would you look with me just for a moment over in John chapter 13 through 15. John 13 through 15. And this is what Jesus said to his disciples. John 15, 13 through 15. "Greater love has no man than this, that one lay down his life for his friend." And Jesus said, "You are my friend if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you slave, for the slave does not know what his master is doing, but I call you friend. For all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you." That's a Jonathan. If we can help you in any way, should you need to become a Christian, or if you've fallen away, would you come now as we stand and sing the song that's been selected?